this parking is big enough to put your hands right inside?
Yes,
the,
you can have them made.
Most
of the Eskimos, they pull them in. Mm-hmm. I used to have my parkies made pretty tight.
Let's go back to this overnight camp on the trail that we just built. It's the dark of the moon, and in December, what time do you have to quit the trail?
Well, you're practically working in the dark in the wintertime.
That's what I thought.
You see, you're working, your moon, your full moon is your daylight.
Now, when you go in this house for the evening and push the door closed behind you, what did you use for light?
Well, I used kerosene lanterns. Yeah, I had a kerosene lantern.
And you got several pairs of mitts wet today, setting traps. How did you dry them out?
Well, in the snow house, you take and you put a peg in this wall, peg in that, a little snow, and chink it like that, and that sets it. And you take a piece of line that you carry and pull that across, that's your clothesline. Then when you come in, on your snow bench, you sit down, you take your foot gear off, and you turn it inside out. Hang that up. You take your fur socks, inside fur socks out, turn that inside out and hang that up. That's the first thing you do. You take off your outside parkie and beat the snow off it. Inside one, you hang up. Then the next morning, you put on new foot gear, you see. Put that foot gear and be dry by morning. Put that in your clothes bag, you see.
You say it would be dry by morning. Now, the only heat in this igloo is what we cooked with our primer stove for dinner tonight, and a few short while we had the kerosene lamp lit, lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And after you turned that out, your temperature was so warm that it dried things during the night.
Well, but when you're doing the cooking with your primer stove, it gets plenty warm in there, and that'll dry what moisture you have in your fur socks or boots. Don't take very long. Then it gets so, after you're cooking, you cook your meal, and of course you turn your primer stove down to keep your snow hut from dripping. If it does start to drip, you just take a hunk of snow and shove up like that to stop that drip. So you have to keep it down pretty good, but a new snow house can take an awful lot of heat before she ices up on you inside. They're nice and warm.
You're on this trap line the remainder part of this winter. You use those houses
Them all winter long. By spring, they start to ice up pretty bad inside.
And they're colder when they're iced up?
Oh, yes. Yes, they're cold when they ice up. A new snow house is nice and warm. Be just like this in here. When you light your primer stove, take your parkie off, sit there on the snow bench, on top of your skins, naked, be nice and warm.
Hmm. Well, you use a sleeping bag entirely on, put on top of the caribou hide then?
Yeah, I used to use two sleeping hides down on my snow bench. I'd build it up, you see, in the place, make a shelf, a regular bench. So you'd be up from your cooking in your pit, you see. It was a pit form. And then my sleeping bags, I made out of fawn skin. I used two. One inside with the hair in and one outside with the hair out because I found that I couldn't keep warm with one.
Unborn fawn?
No. It'd be fawns. That'd be July skins, and they're very light. Then I would take my wife and take a blanket and sew over that case, and then I'd take a piece of 8-ounce canvas and put over that. So when I'd break camp in the morning, I'd just take and wrap it up and make a bundle about like this, tie it up, throw it off the runway, and be nice and dry, and you wouldn't get any snow in the canvas. And very light. You don't think it'd weigh over 7 pounds, the whole thing.
We've come upon our first trap now, and these people have no idea how you kill the fox that's in it. He's still alive. How do you kill him?
Well, the fox, when he's in your trap, if he's alive, you take your snow knife, take the handle of your snow knife, hold the blade on, take the handle, and put it out like this, and he'll grab it. When he grabs it, then you just take him and turn his head over like this. And then you take your mitt off of your left hand and put that or grab him around the neck. And then this hand here, you take your mitt off there, and you take and squeeze his heart here, his ribs, and that'll squeeze the heart down below his ribs, and you find that heart and give it a pull like that, and that'll kill him. Or you can take and grab him by the neck, put your hand around his neck this way, and then twist his head over that way sharp, and that'll break his neck. But if you do that, when you skin the fox, that'll make a blood clot on the hide, so it makes a mess when you skin it. So the heart is the best, because it doesn't leave any blood clot on the hide when you pelt it.
You didn't carry a gun on your sled?
Oh, always carry a rifle. Yeah, your rifle was on your sled. You saw that little miniature out the house? Well, that was just the kind I used to carry.
Do you often run into polar bear on those trips?
Well, once in a while. Once in a while, a crazy one is getting near camps and ruining them. But you never carried a gun for... I never did. I always carried a gun for dog feed to kill, you see, not for my own protection, because I don't believe anything would hurt you.
How did the dogs act when the polar bear showed up down the trail ahead of you?
Well, they don't act very good. They go like the dickens.
Same as they do with the reindeer?
Yeah, they go for them.
You know, Jim's been leading up to everything very nicely, but I'm afraid he's not going to get to water. What about the problem of water, drinking water?
Well, that's a question. Now, we have, on the islands, we have freshwater lakes, you see. Mm-hmm. Then in the summer, we have, on the salt water, your salt water ice, where your ice is ground in the summer, your sun... hitting this ice will make it fresh, you see.
And I'm worried about the trap line now.
Yeah, this is the trap line. Yeah. Oh, yes. Then you take that and melt it for your water. It's much better in snow, because snow water, if you use a lot of snow water, they say it's hard on the kidney. So if you can use ice, it's much better, I believe.
Do you water your dogs?
No, they eat snow all the time. I think if you'd give them a dish of water, they wouldn't drink it.
I had mine spoiled then.
Yeah. No, they're used to snow.
How were these caribou hides that used to float in tanned?
The native tanned. Well, the native tan, in that country, the Cogmalic people used the brain for a tan, which is a nice creamy tan, but... usually they didn't do that. It was just for themselves once in a while. But they'd use a flour tan, make a paste out of it, and put that on the hide and scrape it and roll it up and dampen it down again and scrape it again, you know, and take a few days to do this. Or we used to use felt naphtha soap, made a nice tan. But you have to break your hide first and all the fibers out of it, and then scrape it, and then wet it down with the paste and roll it up and leave it set overnight. And next day, scrape it again and do the same process over and over until you have it fairly worked up so you could use it for clothes.
Strictly.
Well, you were out on the trap line during the winter. Mrs. Mark was
Yeah.
Place
that
young.
Yeah. Yeah, she was alone most of the winter. I'd hit home maybe 8-9 nights during the winter.
you know, the way you're describing this, it looks like your life was easier than ours today. But
I believe so.
I wonder whether or not some episodes somewhere along the line where you had some uncertain moments during the winter trap line.
No, I don't believe so. I've had some in the ice, though, in open water with a schooner. But you expect that, you know. Yeah, you get in a jam once in a while.
Tell us about that goldfish of the Arctic.
Oh, well, I guess everybody knows about the ghost ship, the Bay Chima.
How many years did you visit it or trade with it before it was finally lost?
Oh, well, they used to bring my outfit in.
Well, were
Vancouver.
You in Barrow when it went by Barrow for the last time?
No, we were on it. We were on it going outside, my wife and children, and we got stuck at, we got stuck in the ice there at Seahorse Islands, above the Tannock, there above Wainwright. And it was just too late, it was icier, and we had passed Purd Bay. We couldn't get back into Purd Bay. If we could have got back there, the ship would have been safe. But where we were a quarter of a mile offshore, and all big ice, you see. And you couldn't go ahead, no water. So she just had to winter there. And then this high water came along, and I told them, if you winter after 5th of December here, you'll be safe. Because you usually got this high water around latter part of November, first part of December, you see. When you got the high water, it would raise the ground ice and take the ship with it, you see, and that's what happened. Raised the ice 10 feet, and out went the ship with the ice.
She was loaded with uranium ore, wasn't she?
She had 5 tons of that. That mm-hmm. came down the Coppermine River from Bear Lake County. 5 tons of radium ore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
I went out for the crew and went out. And that's all. Mm-hmm.
She had a lot of stuff on her. She had a lot of guns, their old 44s and 38-55s and ammunition they were taking out of the country.
Oh.
Then they had a lot of coats. Women's coats with fur on that they were taking in that country to sell the Eskimos. They couldn't get them away, so they were bringing that out. They had all kinds of stuff on it.
38, 55.
Yeah.
Tell me, did you do any seal hunting when you were on these trips, or did you just get the seal from the Eskimos?
Oh, no, I'm a hunter. Yeah, seal, no group.
What kind of seal did you get? What kind of seal did they get?
Well, we got a big seal in that country that's about 300 pounds. On the American side, it's Barrow, you get about a 75 to 125, 135 pound seal. But in that country, you get a big seal, about 300 pounds, and it'd be about, 3 to 4 fingers of blubber.
Mm.
So they're nice. One big seal, you had a lot of blubber to it. In fact, my wife and I, we'd go sealing, we'd leave the house, we'd go down through the islands of the Moore group, and the archipelagos, and the Duke of York, and the Lofford Islands, thousands of islands, and we would seal for a month, from the 1st of May to the 1st of June, and we'd camp on an island, and we'd get our seal on top of the ice and bring it back to our camp and blubber it and take the meat and lay it on the rocks. The sun would dry the meat, and the blubber we had put in the snow with the drift of snow where it hadn't melted off yet to keep the blubber fresh until after the sealing. Then we'd haul it home. I'd come back and make trips, and we'd have enough blubber for next winter, you see, enough pure oil. We'd take and render the oil out into other barrels of pure oil, and then the hunks of blubber that didn't render the residue, we would keep in another barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So by fall, by 1st of June, we had our summer's meat up for the dogs, and we had our winter's oil up, blubber oil.
For fuel. Grinder,
for fuel, and cook dog feed once in a while when that's home for them.
Which is the Ood group now? Which
Well, the Ood group is, the dictionary says the Ood group, they call it the bearded seal, but it's a species all itself, like the walrus. The Ood group has a skull for, his head is a skull bone, where a seal is, just has a main brain, you see. There's no bone to a seal's head, just his nose has a bone. But your Ugruk is a skull, bone skull, like your walrus or your beluga, your white whale, is bone.
Do you have many of them in there, the white whales?
They come in from the Alaska side down through the Bering Sea country, and they go north, and they round barrel. They summer off of the delta of the Mackenzie River, east of Herschel Island. They summer there, there'll be hundreds of them. And some will go further east, too.
Do they go into the Coronation?
I've never seen one in there, no.
I wondered if they went exchange.
No, I've never seen one in there.
They found a narwhal at Kotzebue, you know, a narwhal skull and horn.
Uh-huh.
I wondered if they ever came into the Coronation from the east.
No, they could very well, because the whales do come that way. They come through Lancaster Sound, and that's north of Victoria Land, and they come down through there. The whalers used to come from the Greenland side and whale in there in the early days. And of course the carcasses, the old whales, drift in the Coronation Gulf. There was quite a few carcasses, different places that drift up on different islands.
Did you ever do any, that was killing the seal on the ice, did you ever do any winter sealing like the Eskimos are supposed to do?
Well, yes, I did. There's one family came along there, and there was a young couple, man and wife, and the grandparents. So I went out with them to help stand over. So I took one hole. So, but there wasn't enough of us to cover all the blowholes, you see, because the seal had come up in another hole. He'd liable to stand there all day long and never come up. If you got enough people to cover all the holes, somebody's going to get it, then you share alike, you see, everybody shares. But you have to have enough people to cover the blowholes. No, the way they do there, the blowhole is... of the seal in the fall, he keeps this hole open after freeze-up, and he blows in this hole and makes a little cone on top of it, and then a drift of snow comes along, the wind, and keeps building that up, you see, and then when that gets built up, then he'll take and enlarge that hole until finally he gets up in this big drift, and he'll have his young in that drift in the spring, you see. February, he'll have his babies in there. But on these blowholes, you take where the snow is over the top, but you take your snow knife and you cut a little round hole there. You look down the hole like this, and you can tell which side of the hole he's coming up by the scratches on the side. You see, which side he's going to come up. If he's lots of scratches on this side, you know he's going to come up on this side. So then you take this little piece of snow block that you cut away from the hole and you set that back in. Then you take and you stand up over that hole and you take your spear, you see. And you stand up over like that hole like that. Well, when he comes up and blows, the first time you don't strike. Or the second time you don't strike, he'll come up the first time and you'll go, a long blow. The second time, it'll be a little shorter blow. But the third time he blows, then you take this spear right through this snow where he's coming up on the side. You're driving blank, you know, but you know he's going to come up there. Well, if you hit him in the neck, you've got him. Or if you hit him in the body, you've got him. Almost any place, if you hit him solid, you've got him. Then you take your seal pole and put it down, because your line is, say if this is your pole, your line, this is your point here. Well, your line would be fast almost to the middle of it, see? And this point sluice, you see, with the U-group line to your point. Then you drop your pole over the hole so he can't go down with it, you see.
You delay that,
then you grab a hold of the line when he gets tired playing, then you pull him up.
The barb on the end of the harpoon is free of the pole, slips free of the pole, sets in a socket. He sinks the barb under the skin of the seal, and the staff pulls free.
But you do delay that until the third blow. Does that mean he comes up higher?
If he comes up higher, then he'll come way up. First blow, his nose is right out of the water.
That goes in, and the fastener is on about halfway up the point, isn't it? So it turns sideways?
Yeah, you make them, you've seen arrowheads. Arrowheads. Well, you make them about this long for your rod to go in. You use a quarter-inch rod or 5/16 rod at the end. See, and that goes in. But in the middle, you drill a hole through there for your line, see, to tie to this. So when this strikes them, your point comes off into the seal, you see. And of course, your line's fast to your pole. You just put that down. You're fast to them, and you can't get away from it.
Well, ammunition's precious. How do you kill him?
Well, you don't. You don't use ammunition, you just take your knife and stick them. Yeah.
All same thing.
Yeah, you don't waste any ammunition.
Yeah, I realize that.
Yeah.
But I wondered if you drowned him. How long did it take to drown one?
Well, if they're down, they drowned easy if they're fouled up.
Oh, yeah.
The seal in the spring, in June, when the water comes on the ice, if you're sealing under the ice with a net, you take a square net. We used to make them. Oh, it'd be about 8 feet, 9 feet square. And then you get a seal hole. And then you go off of that seal hole and you drill four holes through there, pick through, and scoop the ice out. So you get four holes around to get your net. Will be tied on these holes under the ice. So you put your net down in the seal hole with a line on each hole so you can pick up the line and set your net in there. And you'll have your net about 3 feet lower than the hole under the ice, so the seal come swim under the ice, be free of the net. And he come up on the hole and sun itself on top of the ice. When he gets tired of sunning himself and goes down, he can't stop and he hits your net down there, and then you got him and he fouls up. Then you come along and you pull your net up. But it's quite a little job setting a net under the ice in the spring.
You don't have work. You can't go cut a willow and shove it over to the next hole. How do you feed that line through?
Oh, you have your pole, you see. You have your pole with a hook on it. You drop a line down there with a weight on it. You reach a pole in there and pull that weight out. Hook that net on that, pull it up through the hole, and do that all the way around until you got your net out.
And you're talking about 3 or 4 feet of ice?
No, this ice would be from 5 to 6 feet.
Four holes you got, huh?
Well, you take the ice in that time of year, May, is kind of porous then, and when you start to chip down, you take from the seal oil and the water and dump in there, and that'll cut it, make it faster. Then you have a shovel, a dipper. We used to use a dipper. I have it out the house now. It was out of a musk ox, you see.
horn.
And a horn with a little dipper and pull the ice chipped off the leg. But it was work.
You use a chisel for chipping.
Yes.
Do you use a flat chisel or do you use a pointed rod?
Well, you use anything you can make.
You find one better than
Well, again? Whatever you got.
Well, now, from your vast experience, we read of Parry and these others going to the North Pole and they stop and get some seal at some blowhole. Are these blowholes apparent to a traveler walking on the ice just round the mound?
Well, your dogs will usually smell them out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for that kind of work over at sea, well, you need lots of people. Yeah, because you're liable to stand over one seal hole for days and days and he'd never blow in that hole. Because he'd liable to have hundreds of blow holes here in a radius of 10 miles. And he'd be hitting those. He'd liable not hit that one for days.
Any other questions on Coronation Gulf? We'll try and move him on to Point Barrow. We'd like to know what population you found at Herschel Island when you first went there and by the time you left that country?
Well, Herschel Island's port of entry for Canada and Alaska. They had the Royal Canadian Mounted Police there, and every American bottom ship had to pay anything that was put ashore there, you would pay duty on it. And the Hudson's Bay had a store there. An old whaler by the name of Bill Seymour, he had a little store there. And the population, I would say, there'd be about maybe 40, 50 natives there. But in the early days, the whaling days, the whaling ships used to winter there. It was a great place, harbor there behind the spit. There'd be maybe 300 or 400 whalers winter in there, people.
Hmm. But live aboard their ships.
Yeah, they'd live aboard their ships there. That was when whalebone was went up as...
Used for corset.
Yeah, and the corset stay was went up as high as $7 a pound. Well, a head of bone, a big head, was worth the up in that country. Out of the upper lip it'd be worth about $8,000 to you, see. So there was one ship that had come east of Barrow, the first one, came in there, got 62 head. So that, after he came out, he was there 2 years after he came out, of course, then the rest of the whalers went in there. Some made a big kill, some didn't.
Now you move west. You had a post at demarcation point?
Yes, I had one at demarcation, one at Barter Island. I bought old Tom Gordon's place. I had one at Cape Talcott. I bought that from Herskovich, New York outfit. It was Peterson from Oakland, California. And I put one at Barrow.
What year?
The one at Cape Halifax, 1932. I bought that. And I put in Barrow at about 36, I think. Put in one at Point Barrow.
36? You were strictly a trader then. You didn't trap in the Barrow area.
No, I was getting long in years then. And
time to stay behind the counter.
That's right. Yeah. And, I couldn't call it trapping. I'd set a few traps, but you couldn't call it trapping.
Just to keep in hand.
That's right.
Did the Wolverine ever get on your trap line and rob your traps?
Yeah.
Perpetually and
well,
give you a raffle?
They, every year you'd always lose a few fox, but very seldom you'd ever have one stay on your line. He just crossed it.
Just crossed.
But I had a little island close to the house in Coronation Gulf. I think it's 27 miles around. And before Christmas, I trapped those islands. traps on those. But after Christmas, wasn't any good. So this Wolverine, he got on that line, he just kept going around and around. Of course, number one or one and a half, two trap, you know, is a little too small for him, so all you'd get is a toenail from him. So, anyway, finally, it went on in January before I got him. But he had, I think he'd got 11 white foxes from me then and two blue foxes, Rodney. But I got him with a deadfall, a big slab of rocks in that country. So I got a rock, I guess, 250 pounds to put up. And jacked it up, went to schooner and got the jack. And next time I came around, I had him, but I couldn't get the rock off. So anyway, the next time I came around, I brought the sledgehammer down, broke the rock
off. Rock up, huh?
But he was an old battle-scarred one. His head was all scarred up, and all gray-haired. He only had one good paw on him. That was the left hind foot. All the rest of them and the nails had all been taken off the traps. You see, he'd be springing my traps and pull them right out like that. So I took him home and I told my wife, I says, well, now in about 12 days you bring him in the house. I should be home in 14 days and skin him and then we'll clean them and put them in the oven and roast them. So she had it nice and thawed out when I got home. So I pulled the jacket off and cleaned it and it was nice and fat, you know. So she put it in the oven and stripped it with bacon, you know, fat. And about 15, 20 minutes later, she opened the oven door to baste it. Geez, you never smelled such a smell that came out of that oven. My God, it was awful. He said, take that outside. Old bull, you know. So I took it out and I started from my leader all the way down the dog chain line. Geez, every dog in there turned their nose up. They wouldn't have a thing to do with it. Well, we'd eaten younger ones and they were all right.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but this son of a gun, oh God. Yeah.
Well, you have eaten them.
Oh, yes, we've eaten about everything you can think of. But that fella, boy, he was too tough for us. The dogs wouldn't eat me.
You don't have any brush, timber, willows, alder?
Not unless you get back on the mainland. In some gullies, there was a little creek there between the Copperman Kugarik, they called him about Tuktu. There was a few willows in on that inland. But I'd never gone very far inland. I trapped one near the Rave River. That was south of the Coppermine River. I mean west.
Yeah,
and I trapped up that river. But wasn't any.
Did the Red Fox ever get down to that?
No, they stay on the mainland. Yeah, there's lots of red fox.
Blue fox and silver?
Well, your blue is out of the white fox, you see. Your blue and white is identically the same fox. You see, and your reds, crosses, blacks, and silver, that's identically the same. Only in different litters, you see, with the cross. But your blue and white are the same fox. The white will have a maybe she'll have one pup. Sometimes you get a good female white, she'll throw all blues. But
you don't practice segregation.
No.
Are the blues more desirable?
Oh yes, blues. When fur was up, blue was up too. But of course, when fur was down, it was blues. Everything was down to nothing, you see.
In the winter, when
there's
snow,
Well, the polar bear will get the baby seal, but the polar bear will get the seal in open water. Your leaves form during the winter. Your prevailing wind will be northeast, liable to open up a stretch of water, you see, someplace. but usually not in Coronation Gulf. That's pretty well closed, but west of there, Amundsen Gulf, from there into Barrow, you'll have these leads on and off all during the winter. With a general northeaster, she'll open up Barter Island offshore. She'll open up Halkett. Barrow, she'll open up that. A westerly will close it, you see. But you get your general storm, a northeaster will open up where you have where it's not protected by islands.
The seal come up on the ice and these open leads, that's where the polar bear hunts.
The polar bear will lay right on the edge of the lead and quiet, and the seal will be swimming right along close to the lead, and you just take his paw like that, and dead seal. In fact, we robbed a bear of, he had a blucher, that's your white whale, they call it. He had that thing, we were caught in the ice northwest part of Banksland. We drifting up and down there for about 22 days. We could see over here from the crow's nest, the masthead, that this bear over here, he was chewing on something, so he's about, I imagine, 2 miles away, so I went over there. And here he had a blucher up on the ice, up on top of the ice. And that was, I'd say it was 12, 14 feet long. But he had most of the muktuk eaten off it, that's the outer skin. Still, there was some left on the fluke, so I cut the fluke off, brought it back, and we ate that ourselves.
Do the wolves come down there across Coronation Gulf?
Yeah, there's lots of wolves. In the north, on Victoria Land, lots of wolves, all through that country.
Stepman said they're pretty good eating.
I've never eaten wolves. I've never eaten dogs. That's the only two things I haven't eaten. Speaking of fox, fox. Wolf and dog I've never eaten.
When did you come down out at some
time? Well, I sold out on the American side to Brower in 45. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Charlie or?
Oh, Charlie died. He was dead then. David.
David?
David and Tommy.
Did you know McIntyre?
Samuel McIntyre?
Yeah. He was at demarcation,
wasn't he? Yeah, Sam. In fact, Sam was a partner of mine at one time.
A very big fellow.
Yeah, he died in our place.
I think his daughter is here, John.
I think that's a different McIntyre. There's two McIntyres.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, Sam McIntyre, he was the one that struck Tin City. He had Tin City first, you know, 1907. Yeah, old Samuel McIntyre. He was with Laughing Well for a good many years. Yeah.
Well, to close out with, it's printer 10 o'clock. Can you tell us a little bit about Point Barrow, when you went there and what it was like then?
Well, Barrow...
Before it got modern?
Barrow had a population, when we were there, 320. That was the kids and... 320 was the population, and you could smell Barrow 5 miles before you got that there, because they were still burning blubber and bones, you know, and you could smell that from the huts. Most of them were sod huts they had, and a few had driftwood, but most of them were sod huts, and they were awful nice people. The old natives, they were good whalers, and they were all good providers. They seemed to have plenty then, more than I believe they have now.
Was Dr. Marsh up there at that time?
That was before my time, Marsh. Mm-hmm. Presbyterian Mission.
Yes, I think his daughter was born up there, Elizabeth.
That was
the first white child born.
Yeah, that's Barrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Dr. Grice was there, and then Dr. Newhall was there from Unalaska. He came. Or Newhall was first, I guess.
Red area?
Did you want to come up with you to the North Country to begin with, or did you go back later and bring you
I went back later, yeah. Yeah. In Coronation Gulf, as far east as we were, yeah, she was. Yes. And, there's one book, Bill Finney, he wrote it, and he has that, Alec, that's my wife.
You know Fred Airy?
Ned Airy?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Ned's been dead a long time. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know all the old-timers. In fact, we were just kids, my wife and I, and these were all old-timers then. They used to call us the children. Yes, old Ned Airy and Bill Seymour, Tom Gordon. Fred Hobson, Jim Allen.
Well, it's 10 o'clock, Mr. Morris.
Yeah.
It's been a very fine evening, and we want you to have a cup of coffee and a little rest, so we will turn the tape off and have a little social.
Yeah.